Shank Baggily. Shank Baggily. Shank Baggily. Hello and welcome to Shatbaggily, an old Lincolnshire adjective to describe absolutely anything loose and disorderly, which sums up this Lincolnshire lass quite nicely, as I do tend to go off on a tangent every so often. In a moment we have news, read the scone recipe last week, we chat apples over a gate and meet a woman who created a life-size tractor in cheese. First though, with it being episode 21, here are a few other things with the same number. Number one singles achieved in the UK by none other than Elvis Presley, the most by any artist. The longest one-way road in the world, the M2 Southern Expressway in Adelaide, South Australia, allows only one direction of traffic flow at any one time. It runs towards Adelaide City in the morning and swaps to a southbound flow in the afternoon. It's 21 kilometres in length with two lanes and an emergency hard shoulder. Speaking of which, 21 is also the record for the most biscuits broken with shoulder blades in 1 minute. Of course it is. Hope you're okay wherever you are in the world. We've witnessed dreadful atrocities in the news this week, haven't we? Makes you question the year we're all living in. Is 2023 and not in the dark ages? And sadly, there's nothing that you and I can do about it other than care. Hopefully we can lose ourselves for a little while in food and conversation. Starting with a lady who you met last week, baking-loving New York actress Kim Goldfeder-Clark. Kim was so taken with a scone recipe developed by another guest on the same podcast, Callum Smith, that she wanted to try it herself. However, the recipe only called for self-raising flour, double cream and lemonade, none of which, I quickly discovered, are available in the States or Canada. However, with a little imagination and substitutions, Kim made them. But how did she get on?
So it was a lot of fun. I have to say, Callum's recipe is so user-friendly. A couple of the ingredients, as we discussed on Instagram, your page, we don't have here in America. So the double cream, I did whipping cream as a substitute.
Oh.
And I had to laugh because I bought a couple of items to substitute for what you're calling lemonade that's carbonated.
Yeah.
Because here in America, we don't have a carbonated lemonade. So I bought this bizarro kombucha, which I'm sorry for all the kombucha lovers out there. I think it tastes like something the dog drank. It's horrible. But it was like a lavender lemon. So I said, ooh, exotic. Maybe I'll try that.
Yeah.
And then I also, I have to apologize, Oliver is barking now in the background.
We can hear him. What's it, is he barking to get to you or barking at something?
I wish I could say he was barking to get at the scones. He's barking at the pool company. This service man is outside. Oh. Shut the door, although I think he'll still hear him. So I bought this kombucha, just one can of it, because it's rather expensive. And then I bought this other kind of like protein power drink that had lemon. And honestly, I forego both of them. And I just used a can of LaCroix. So it's basically seltzer. And like the recipe says, I just threw everything in a big bowl. And I knew I wanted to make different flavors. So I made about four that were the original. Easy as could be. Then I made the other half of that recipe, you know, that batter, I made blueberry lemon.
Oh, nice.
It was nice. So I just grated some zest and threw in some frozen blueberries. Well, my oven decided to go on the fritz.
God.
So I said, oh, for God's sake. So my mom, who lives with Jerry and I, she has an entirely different apartment on the first floor of our house. I said, Ma, take this stuff out of your oven. Because I don't know about you, but she's of the mind where she puts nonsense in her oven, be it like her puff puffs, meaning like nosh, popcorn or chips or extra bowls. So I yelled out to her, Ma, empty your oven. I need your oven. So I baked them, like Callum said, for 12 minutes.
Yes.
Okay. Oh. So half the sheet was the blueberry lemon, half was the original.
Uh-huh.
And I'm known to do, I go, Ma, taste it. So I gave her a blueberry lemon.
Yes.
So she was on her lounge chair, feet up in the air, watching her shows. She took a bite and her face, she was like, it wasn't done. And she's like, get me a napkin. So of course I'm almost wetting my pants laughing. So I said, wait a minute. So I ran, I got her a napkin. So then her tongue was blue from the blueberries. Okay. So I realized, okay, they have to go back in the oven.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like anything, your oven, you have to adjust it.
Of course.
So 20 minutes, but they were lovely. And I also brushed the top with heavy cream, you know, the same whipping cream that I use.
Right.
Because it was either that or maybe an egg wash. Okay. So I went for the heavy cream. And then I made the whole batter again, split the batter, and I made cheddar cheese. I grated some cheddar cheese into it. Mm-hmm. The other half was, and this was my favorite, pumpkin maple with caramelized pecans.
Ooh.
Also did some dashes of cinnamon. So good, Katie. So good. Yeah, so I'm a fan. Tell Colm, if you're listening. Bravo. It was very good.
I hadn't appreciated that in America, or indeed Canada, you don't have lemonade, but you don't have double cream either. So it's heavy cream. But you said you use whipping cream. So whipping cream's even less fat than heavy cream. Because Colm said it needed to be at least 48% fat, didn't he?
He did. Well, what's funny is, yeah, I mean, obviously we have lemonade in the States, but it's different. Like you say, it's not carbonated. And as far as double cream, we don't have it unless it's a British specialty store. And in our supermarkets, you will see whipping cream or heavy cream.
Yeah.
To be honest, in the past, I just substituted one for the other, really not realizing the difference. Mm. And I just bought what the supermarket had. And it was whipping cream. But yeah, I don't know what the difference would be if I bought the heavy cream. Obviously, the fat content would be different. But I also, I mean, we might have self-raising flour. I had to make my own.
Oh.
Yeah. So which self-raising flour here is all-purpose flour, what you would call plain flour.
Right.
For every cup of all-purpose or plain flour, you do a teaspoon of baking powder.
Got you.
So, you know, I just made my own. But I was surprised. It rose more than I expected it to. Although some of them, it was a little inconsistent. If I was on the Great American Baking Show, I'm sure Paul and Prue would dock me for my inconsistencies.
Oh, wow. They look amazing. The pumpkins.
Thank you.
Look at the color of the pumpkin ones. Really beautiful.
Right? Yeah. So I'll show you the difference. So this is the cheddar cheese. It looks like it's not done, but it is.
Yeah.
Next time I would add like a nice herb. I was trying to think what herb would go lovely with cheddar cheese. Maybe thyme. Ooh. Or...
chive would be your best bet.
Yeah. Mm. Chive would be great. And there's the blueberry lemon.
Oh, and they haven't sunk, have they, the blueberries?
No, you're right. I didn't have to like you know how sometimes in recipes you take your fruit and you like put them in flour? Maybe because the whole thing was in the flour. I mean, so few ingredients. And then this was my favorite. Yeah.
It does look nice. A lovely golden color to that.
And the caramelized pecans. I mean, just, I can't wait to have this for breakfast. Just a loveliness.
Beautiful.
What I found about it, it's very moist and airy. You know how sometimes scones, to tell the truth, to me, they tasted like American what we would call a biscuit.
Okay.
Sometimes they're like rocks. I mean, really, you're like, oh, who would eat this? But Colm's recipe, very fluffy, very light and moist. What I loved most about it was you can do anything with it. Like he said, you know, herbs, cheeses, vegetables, fruits, dried fruits. Really lovely.
The thing is, though, I felt dreadful because we did this recipe with three ingredients. And this podcast, as a 70% listenership, is in the States, followed by Canada. And so these three ingredients are neither available in the States or indeed in Canada. And I never knew. So you can do it. You just have to adjust.
Absolutely. And that's the thing about a good recipe. You have the bones, and then even if you can't get the ingredients, maybe something isn't to your particular taste. So you go, okay, instead of this, I'm going to try that.
Mm-hmm.
So even though, you know, here in the States or in Canada, wherever, if you don't have that ingredient, A, you can make your own self-raising flour, and B, you can substitute something else. So you can change the recipe as long as you got that bare bones, and then play, which is, you know, brings out your creativity, really.
Here in the UK, so scones, English, Welsh, Scottish, they originate from Scotland, apparently. They started off with oats or something. But I came across a lovely little book all about scones and different versions. You've got four options. There's chocolate orange scones. There's lemon and coconut scones. There's Christmas pudding scones. Or honey, ginger and sunflower scones. So you're allowed to pick one of those recipes. Which one are you going to pick?
I would pick the Christmas one. The pudding one? Oh, that caught my eye right away.
Right. And this is a creative way to use leftover Christmas pudding. So you've got your 450 grams self-raising flour. Here we go again. You'll have to do your own. 55 grams of caster sugar, half a teaspoon of mixed spice, 55 grams butter cubed, 250 mils milk, a tablespoon of brandy. It says optional. I think it's a necessity. And then 125 grams of leftover Christmas pudding broken into tiny pieces.
First of all, now you know me. I want to make this recipe. But first you have to make the Christmas pudding, which now you got to get me the recipe to that.
Do you do Christmas puddings in the States?
Well, I can only speak for myself. No. I mean, maybe somebody does. But no, we don't do a Christmas. Is that where you make it for weeks and weeks and you keep adding booze to it?
Well, that's more the cake.
Okay.
The Christmas pudding, no, but you do take a long time for steaming it. So your kitchen becomes a sauna. It's about 8 hours steaming.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Didn't they do that on the Great British Baking Show once? They put it in a pot and they had a pudding and then they had it tied. Maybe I'm thinking of a different challenge.
Yeah, you do tie it. You do it with greaseproof paper over and then foil and then string round it. So it's nice tight and you just put it in and it's about 8 hours steaming. I mean, it's an amazing. Oh. If you get a good Christmas pudding recipe, we have a family recipe that goes back. Ooh. Generations. Now am I to share that?
I will tell you this, Katie. I will not dock you one bit if you do not want to share. Because I always say I will share anything and everything except for the one recipe, which is my great-great Aunt Fanny's Rugula. Mm. I just refuse. But anything else, sure. So if you stand on that hill, I will not be offended.
No, I will share it with you. I will send it to you personally and you can have a go. Because we don't have mixed spice in ours, because a lot of people have mixed spice in theirs, which we just don't. We have stout. Do you have stout?
Guinness? We would have
a Guinness.
Guinness, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, that's in there. Lots of dried fruits. So
now,
do you have suet?
No. I mean, I'm sure we could get. I once made something with suet. God awful. But yes, I mean, I'm sure I could go to a local butcher and maybe get it, but oh God in heaven, what can you substitute? Here we go. What do you substitute for suet?
I don't know.
I mean, would it be Crisco? God knows.
I don't know what that is.
Crisco is basically lard.
Suet is available, I'm looking this up, but unusual in the States. So we've hit a stumbling block already. Okay, so we need to put it out there.
So Katie and I want to know what you would substitute for suet. Because Lord knows I don't want to use suet.
So there you go. Suet in a Christmas pudding. What can Kim use as a substitute? As in America, it's not available. As promised, I will send my family recipe for the pudding over to Kim just in time for Stir Up Sunday, which is when we traditionally make them here in the UK. The date this year, 26th of November. I'll post pictures of Kim's scones on Shat Bagley's Instagram and Facebook pages. And you can also follow Kim on Your Mum's in the Kitchen and also Mr. Bentley's World, where you'll be able to see Ollie in the flesh and not just hear him barking at the pool man. I have to say a huge thank you for getting in touch when the scone recipe came out. Cherie is a 5-star pastry chef at the Four Seasons in San Francisco. She uses heavy cream in their scones and said Sprite can certainly replace lemonade. Meg said, how about adding buttercream to the heavy cream to up the percentage fat? Toby said heavy cream shouldn't make much difference. The recipe will just have a slightly lower fat content, so less rich, but be aware the dough is a little wetter. Ruby asked, how about evaporated milk? Lisa says a lemon Pellegrino would work, regards lemonade. I do like one of those. I prefer the orange one, but I do like them. Kath said she'd definitely try it. And Loreen was the one who tipped me off about Canada. So thanks, Loreen. And lemonade there being lemon juice, water and sugar. And yet no carbonation. And Jerry says, my family are going to think I've lost it if I pour pop into scones. So hang on to your hats, boys. Brilliant. And all from a lockdown recipe during COVID. Our next guest is also someone who has kindly joined us before, Chef Darren Bale. Darren loves his gardening and growing and managed to join me for 5 minutes to chat about apples, cider, chutneys, and more importantly, taking ownership of your fruit trees, even if it's just one.
If you've got an apple tree, even if you use a couple of basketfuls, you've taken ownership of your bounty from your own garden. I did it the other day. I just grabbed a load of apples, took them indoors, a couple of onions, a bit of allspice, a couple of teaspoons of that, chucked it all into a pan, stewed it up, put a few oversized courgettes because we've had an abundance of those this year, and just made a nice little chutney with green tomatoes. I chucked in as well. I chucked in a handful of them because they weren't going to ripen, so I thought, well, instead of just chucking them on the compost, whack them into the chutney, cook them down for an hour or more, you know, use your senses of watching it cooking down. About a pint of vinegar, white wine vinegar or cider vinegar. Don't use sarsens or the malt vinegars. Really tasting it and just working out whether you need more sugar, you know, because you add a bit of sugar as well. Maybe add a little bit of caramelized sugar, like a brown sugar, just to give it another dimension. Bung a bit of honey in there and just start to just be that hunter-gatherer, storer, come, you know, waiting for that big snowdrop to come down. So when you when you're all stuck at home, you've got some nice chutney to go with a bit of cheese that you've acquired and left at the bottom of your drawer.
You're not going to start growing your hair and beard really long and wearing loincloths, are you, like going back to caveman?
No risk of that. No, I just been fortunate to have a little bit of space to have a tree or two, and having things like plums and cherries and stuff like that, so it's all stuck inside me, you know, it's just stuck in my head. And now that we're working out what sort of money we've got to spend on food and getting excited about what we're growing, because I have gone into growing as well now, as well as being a chef, and because I teach chefing as well, is that I'm now trying to bring that in. So if I go somewhere, I'm taking some products that I've grown, so it becomes part of a conversation as you're teaching people to cook. So it hopefully starts a little bit of a spark and a little bit of, oh, I'll buy a raised bed, you know, because you can get them pretty cheap, or make your own out of a couple of pallets and just fill it with, have a go, you know, just chuck your weight into it. But apples, you know, making a bit of cider, just scrap them down and press them, so you got a bit of
what's scrat them down? Come on, I know you're from Devon.
Scrap them down, that's like it's like an oversized grater, you know, you're really making it like a big chunks of apple, you're breaking them down, so when they go into the press, they sort of already sort of releasing their juices, and then you press them all down, get all your nice juice away from the pulp, and then you just sort of put it into demijohns, put the airlock in, make sure it's all sterile, obviously. I am going across this quite briefly, but you know, make sure your hygiene's right for the jam jars and everything you're going to use, your demijohns, and then leave it, and just make sure the bubble don't dry out, you know, the water in your bubble airlock. And then you can leave it in there as long as you like. And then when you feel like bottling it, you can bottle it, or you can drink it straight from the demijohn. If you want to put a bit of alcohol into it, you add a bit of sugar and then let it go on again. You can make apple fizz, you know, you like an apple, fizzy apple, like proper cider with, you would from the bars, but it's got a bit of gas in it. That's just by adding sugar and then bottling it and then being careful you don't blow all the tops. So it's a bit of fun, and because that goes back to as I grew up, you know, the home brew behind the sofa, and you're watching telly, and all of a sudden one of the corks come flying over your head and bounces off the ceiling. And that was the time before we had takeouts, you know, going to a supermarket and buying wine it's not that old, is it?
No.
And if you had a takeout, you went down the off license down the bar. But apples is great, you know, even if you just have a couple sat in a fruit bowl, you know, for the kids to eat as they walk past.
What are you going to do with the pulp, though? You're saying about cider and all, and separating them. What can you do with that?
Well, that can go on to the compost anyway. You can chuck that on and that'll rot away and become part of your feed and your compost. There isn't that much more you can do, really. I mean, I suppose you could cook it down and start making chutney out of that. I'm not sure. I haven't done that yet, but I'm sure there's somebody out there has and probably could say that it's quite successful. It's just really taking ownership of that apple tree. And I think it's important that you don't let them all just fall to the floor. And okay, good for the birds, good for the different animals that like a little chomp on the apple. I've even got my dog likes a bit of an apple, runs around with it in the mouth. I'm sure it's drunk sometimes. It's just picking them up and using them, and making sure that you share as well, you know. And you can share your chutney after you've made it if you really think you've got too many jars because you've gone a little bit wild. Just give a few away because it makes people smile, and if it's good, they'll come back for more next year, and maybe your cottage industry could start something like that.
I'm going to see you soon, hanging over a farm gate with a bit of straw in the corner of your mouth. You're becoming that guy.
Yeah, hear me, chef's whites.
Yeah, maybe not. Chef Darren Bale, without the straw, talking about apples. We're blessed with an abundance of them in our part of the country, and our cider makers are busy harvesting them as we speak. Bit of a sad sight yesterday. Glyn and I did a tip run, took the hedge cuttings as too many for our green bin at home. And as we deposited them, I was going to say flung in, but I thought, no, I'll be a bit more grown up. As we deposited them into the container, right at the bottom, and so obviously it was a fairly new container, were loads of apples just sitting there. Such a waste. Get that chutney on. Did I tell you I bought a kettlebell? I know, I've gone off on one. It was recommended by the osteopath I went to. I went, what was it, a few visits ago. Well, he signed me off. I only need to go for maintenance every 3 months now. Love the fact we're like a car. My bonnet's definitely had its day. I've got to try and do 200 swings a day, he says. It's the exercise for everything, he says. Its best work at the moment is as a doorstop. But I promise, once we calm down work-wise, I'll be there. I'll be a new woman. Glyn can't wait. Time for our final guest and a superstar in the world of food art. Prudence State from Gloucestershire sculpts with chocolate and food to make edible art. Her client list reads like a who's who, and she's travelled the world with her creations. It's been a few years since we last caught up. I know Dad hasn't been well, and obviously COVID affected everything. So is she still working worldwide?
It's mostly in the UK, although we have been sending sculptures abroad. So this year we've sent a sculpture over to New York, France, and one to Germany.
What of?
Well, not chocolate this time. We've been experimenting lately with shortbread for Walker's.
Right.
Quite nice, because I actually love shortbread. It's one of my sort of favourite go-to products. So I've got a few pictures I can show you. We recently made Edinburgh Castle.
That's phenomenal. So Prudence is showing me a picture of Edinburgh Castle in all sorts of shapes and sizes of shortbread. How many biscuits is in that then?
I can't remember the exact figure. It was well over 2,000. So it was quite nice. We had like the shortbread fingers and little Scotty dogs and rounds and all sorts of different shapes to make like the castle rock. And then the actual castle itself was made out of shortbread fingers of the different sizes. So it's been a bit sort of architectural, which has been quite nice, slightly different to what I've normally worked on.
Yeah.
More challenging with how do you stop it from crumbling and all those sorts of things. But we've managed to work that one out, so much that we were able to make this one, which is a Cologne Cathedral, which got shipped over to Germany.
Okay.
And was on display an exhibition for a couple of weeks, and is now being, I think, sent back to the UK, or they're keeping it over there, can't quite remember. And this one, which is at the Empire State Building.
Oh, yes.
That went all the way over to New York.
Fond memories of that place for me, Prudence, because that's where Mr. Johnson proposed at the top of there.
Yeah. Oh, how lovely.
Yeah, so I do have a bit of a love with that place. So obviously not life size. How tall are we talking in particular? Because they all look from a picture similar size. So, I mean, yeah. You have to help an old bird. How high are we talking?
It's about... 160 centimetres, around the 4 or 5 foot mark.
Oh, that's fairly tall.
Yeah, not like sort of little things, you know, quite substantial, quite heavy.
Yeah.
Sort of being, you know, but sizable, so they look good on a stand, but not so bulky that, you know, they get to an airport and they're like, I don't know how we're going to move it.
So did they travel finished then?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Because at one stage we were going to think about going over to one of the countries, but it's been quite difficult to leave. So, yeah, it worked so far. So, fingers crossed the next one's going to be all right, which I can't tell you what that is. But
oh, secret.
Yeah. On top of shortbread, I've also been, earlier in the year, for the coronation, we made a crown out of strawberries.
Yes, you did. I can see it. Yeah. So what's so is the green the crown? It's awfully. Is it the coronet bit? Is the green bit?
Yeah.
And that's what leaves.
Yeah. So everything to do with strawberries. So we had the strawberry leaves, which the client gave to us because they were strawberry growers.
Right.
And even with strawberry flowers on there. Then we took all of the strawberries off it after we'd photographed it and made it into jam. Jam of various and sort of successes, I have to tell you, because this is the first batch, which is not jam.
Oh,
this
no.
is just jam liquid.
Why have you kept it?
Well, it's great over ice cream.
Ah.
And the plan was originally was to reboil it and put some pectin in it and cook it up again, but we haven't got round to it, so we've just been spooning it into gin, and it's been great. It's going so gin was a sort of strawberry puree, has been wonderful. But we also made some strawberry brandy and some strawberry gin, so all of the strawberries were used into making stuff, so we could eat it and drink it. So
right.
that was quite nice. And we had a cheesecake made out of the shortbread biscuit base.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been sort of living off the sort of food that we've been working with.
Amazing.
Which is quite nice.
I tell you, the one that I did see, the probably a more recent post, was a life-size bowling ball.
That was
incredible. I'm guessing it was life-size. It looked like, so what was that for then? I don't know why I'm doing this with my hands. I'm shaping a bowling ball.
It was 21.63 centimeter diameter, which was pretty much spot on to the size of a real bowling ball. They were hollow rather than solid or whatever they are, because inside there was an invitation to a new bowling alley that was being opened in Manchester.
Ah.
And they were sent out to key journalists and influencers and that sort of thing, where they had to smash it open to reveal the invite.
Mm.
The idea was that the bowling balls looked as real as possible and were edible.
Wow.
And would travel without breaking.
Yeah.
So that they could then smash them. And it was quite amusing, really, because I specifically said to the client, they'll need a rolling pin or something like that to smash it, because it'll be thick chocolate.
Mm.
And one of the recipients used his head to break it open. I was like, oh, that must really hurt. Because it was, you know, my chocolate's not sort of like thin or anything. It was like that thick, and it must have, I don't know, yeah, death by chocolate to a certain extent.
What a way to go, though, eh?
Yeah, yeah. So they were really fun, quite labour intensive, because each one was individually hand painted using cocoa butter.
Oh.
So I had the mold painted that all in first,
yeah.
Then layered it with the chocolate, and then joined them. And then had to hide the seam. So that was painstaking work, just trying to, you know, blend in the pattern. Mm. So
you're a clever lady, aren't you?
Nice one.
Clever lady.
Oh, thank you.
I know we've chatted in the past and it's most have been chocolate. I know you've done things with cheese. You did it. Was it the cheese wardrobe? Was that a butter wardrobe? No, it was a cheese wardrobe, wasn't it?
I've done a life-size cheese tractor.
Of course you did.
I made Boris Johnson out of butter. I can't believe it's not Boris. That was it. You'd probably melt by now.
Yeah. Was that was that a head or a whole thing?
Yeah, it was a bust. So just some sort of heel to, you know, right. Classic bust.
Yeah.
Life size of his head, which he unfortunately he is toast now. So that kind of goes with that, doesn't it?
you do food art, that is you. So is there food that you, I don't know, you wouldn't be able to do anything with? Have you found one yet?
I had an interesting time with raw fish.
Oh.
Where I had to come up with ideas creatively to use particularly raw cod. And yeah, I made it into Swallow Falls. The one at Betsy Code, or Betsy Coyd, whoever you say it. I think it's Swallow Falls.
Right.
So I've used the raw fish, like a waterfall coming down with mackerel and sardines as the rocks. It was actually quite effective. So that worked quite nicely. I had an interesting time with raw steak as well. The client wanted them to be made into roses. And I was thinking it probably bleed and but, I don't know if it'll hold together.
But the other thing is that can't keep long, can it? Especially the fish. I mean, you say your things go abroad. There's no way you'd be able to say that fish one, would you? I mean, it wouldn't take long for a bit of a smell going on.
Yeah, we were very careful with that because we sort of made it, photographed it, and then I froze it because it was fresh fish.
Or
ate it. So yeah, we tend to eat what we're working with. So
that would be fatal for me. I don't think I'd be able to go out the room. That would be, I wouldn't be able to get through the door. If you have to eat everything that you create, my word, Prudence.
Yeah, it's quite nice. I mean, obviously the chocolate ones, you know, people can, that lasts a lot longer.
Yeah.
So other people can eat that and normally it's given to somebody. But things, if we're making it in the studio, then obviously, you know, we need to consume it. So when we made some life-size sheep, like you do, out of cauliflower, when we were eating cauliflower cheese, cauliflower soup for quite some weeks, afterwards. So.
What was
they were fun.
I bet they were. Have you got, I don't know, it's because you've been doing this for years, haven't you? Is there a favourite one, or is a favourite one keep cropping up? So for instance, you said there's one in the pipeline, can't say, but Matt might be the next favourite one. Or is the one that you did and it will forever be?
I think the most interesting one was the Carlsberg chocolate bar for the television ad that we did, which was by far the biggest project chocolate-wise I think we've ever done. That was 6 meters long, 3 meters wide, 2 meters high, all made out of chocolate, with a chocolate bar with a functioning beer pump, and all the walls were chocolate. And I think that was probably the most memorable project, just by the fact that there was such sheer amount of chocolate and components that went into it. And it was my favorite medium, really. You know how much I love chocolate. That was sort of, for me, the sort of dream project. Scary and sort of exciting at the same time.
Because you always think with cooking with chocolate, for instance, the only way I can think about it, so if you're cooking with chocolate, they would say that the better quality, the higher percentage of cocoa is the best. What about you, though, with your totally different medium when you sculpture? Is it the cheaper end or the higher end?
To me, it's never made any difference. Store-owned chocolate, unbranded, can work as well as Valrhona, if we're going to be, you know, pedantic about it. It depends what your taste is. I mean, there's loads of people that don't like very bitter chocolate, but they love a bit of Cadbury Dairy Milk, and that's fine. Cadbury Dairy Milk does work in a different way. It's got a different temperature that you can get it to if you want to retemper it. So that's a little bit, because it's very thick, which is brilliant if you're sculpting with it, where you want it a bit like clay, whereas a sort of chocolate that's got more cocoa solids in it tends, or can be, thinner. It's less viscous. So that's harder if you want that to become like clay. You have to let it cool down a bit. And really, I think it's just down to personal taste.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll eat any chocolate, and I'll work with any chocolate.
When you first get then the, I don't know, you say phone calls from the client, they will guess they'll have their own idea, or do they say, we want you to come up with an idea? How's it work? How do you work together?
Bit of both, really. Sometimes I'll get told, this is the product, we want to do something creative with it, what could you suggest, or what do you think might fit? And then I'll sort of go away, maybe research the product, find something that's relating to that particular client or things that are happening in the world at the time that we might be able to sort of hook onto. other times it's a PR company that's got a very specific sort of idea in mind that they want to create. And sometimes those are impossible ideas. I mean, there have been a few which have been like, yeah, that's never going to happen. Like a 50-foot high jelly Mickey Mouse sculpture to be put on a boat on the Thames and taken over to Disneyland Paris, I think has got to be the top 10 all time. What? So many things that could go wrong with that, like death, multiples. It's just, yeah, so, you know, great idea, but in reality, probably not sensible. But yeah, most of the time, it's a bit of a collaboration. So normally if I look at a product and think, oh, that would be great because it would work like this and this and this, therefore we could create that with it. Other times it's sort of like the product is quite restrictive of what you can do with it. So I have to think of a way that we can adapt it to make it work. Mm. So, yeah.
So you must have an incredible area where you put all this, because you'll need frames, won't you? You'll need things making. Mm. This isn't from your kitchen. Tell me it's not from your kitchen.
It was originally, when I first started off, which was over 20 years ago. It was my parents' kitchen, actually. And I sort of took over the entire house, because at the time we were making a life-size chocolate room with a full-size fireplace, and there were just pieces of it everywhere. And it just, we were being filmed by the BBC at the time for a documentary, and there were just skirting board lengths in every room. It was just mad. We couldn't live and exist. So they kind of said, this is enough, you know, you need a studio. So I've been at the studio I built since 2005. I've been there quite a while now. Mm. It's great because it means I can sort of do all the sort of research and design and then the actual building of it. And obviously it needs to be edible. So I have a proper food grade kitchen so I can actually make the sculptures in a proper environment.
So we've said that we're a jelly going over to Disneyland Paris is not going to work. What else wouldn't work? Is it the obvious things? I'm just trying to think. It's got to be sturdy to begin with. A bit like the old hobnob biscuit versus the rich tea. The rich tea wouldn't stand a chance.
When people think that I could make, I don't know, like tomato ketchup three-dimensionally.
Oh, right, got you.
I don't know. It's a liquid. So I can paint it. Mm. Painting that on omelets or pizza bases like I do, that works really well. But actually having it made sculptural, unless you froze it, I don't know what else you could do with that.
Yeah.
And then a bit like ice sculpture then, really. I don't know. I normally try and figure out a way around everything because that's how my brain works. Mm. So,
God. Yeah. We said it has taken you all over the world, not so recently because of Dad, but you have been all over the world, haven't you?
Yeah.
And normally these places are a lot warmer than the UK, which always tickles me as well when most of it is cheese, butter or chocolate.
I think one of the maddest ones was working in Adelaide. It was December and I was building a chocolate walk-in wardrobe, which had mannequins, walls, lots of rooms and things, parts of it. And it was December and it was a brand new shopping centre and no one had actually really thought about it. It's Australia, it's hot. They hadn't included air conditioning into the build.
No.
Which I was quite surprised at. I just assumed that it would be there because it's hot.
Mm.
It's hot there. But it wasn't. So we had to get air conditioning units brought in to try and keep the chocolate cool because it got to like 35 degrees indoors. Oh. And I was walking around with the thermometer going, it's 35, and just freaking out for like days on end. And actually, because everything was solid chocolate, it held up really, really well. Nothing really melted. You got a little bit of softening, but overnight it then cooled down.
Mm.
So yeah, I was sort of known for being the sort of mad artist that was basically going, it's 25 degrees, it's 30. You know, just spent 3 weeks of my life doing that.
And then they just thought, typical artist, yeah.
Yeah, typical Brit, come over here in December. Of course it's going to be hot.
Now, I know you've done a couple of portraits, well, several portraits, and I guess sometimes you get to meet the person that you've done the portrait of chocolate in.
Hmm.
Who would be the most famous person you've handed over a portrait for, and what do they say?
Oh, God, that's a tough one. I don't know who to choose out of that lot. Difficult one. Graham Norton, Dawn French, Jennifer Saunders. Some guy from the All Blacks, which I can't remember his name, and I didn't realise who he was at the time. Richie, somebody, who actually was staying in the same hotel with, and I asked him to mend the toaster because I think he worked there, and actually he was like the team captain of the All Blacks, which I'd never heard of. Classic. That's my kind of classic move. Very embarrassing.
Did you
not later met him?
Did you not recognise him from the portrait that you've been done and given?
I hadn't done it. I hadn't done it by then.
Oh,
I hadn't actually got around to doing it. I was horrified.
Did he amend the toaster?
Yes, he did actually.
What a good guy. What a guy.
Yeah.
You see, yeah, we like him.
It was one of those horrible rotatory ones that take the toast back and it comes in a different building. It was one of them.
Dreadful things. No, absolutely dreadful. Oh, it's good to know he can do that then. If anyone finds themselves in a hotel with him, this all black, we now know he can mend a toaster. Gosh, that's a heck of a list, isn't it, of people?
Yeah. I suppose because I did lots of portraits for television. So obviously, like Jonathan Ross, Eamon Holmes, all those sorts of things, because they were quite nice prizes to sort of give out and... Head sculptures and things like that work well for that.
Yeah. Have you ever done yourself?
Yes, that's where it all started from, really, because after sculpting a penguin out of a pear, if I get that the right way, when I was 6 years old, that's where this sort of idea of being a food artist came from. And when I was doing my degree at Winchester, I thought, well, I want my artwork to be interactive and edible. And I didn't really know where to start. So I started with the self-portrait like you do in normal art stuff or normal art materials. So, yeah. And I have over the years refined how they were, but they were quite chunky and clunky to start with, very sort of pop arty. But now they're much more detailed, I think. I've refined the sort of technique. It's still sort of along the lines of, you know, the fact you can eat your head, which is the whole idea. Quite like that. Your own face,
yeah,
or if you know, smash somebody else's, it's quite a nice sort of therapeutic chocolate.
The possibilities are endless. Everyone needs a chocolate head. The hugely talented Prudence State from foodisart.co.uk, and we'll definitely have her back on to find out who that current client was. She said it was very exciting, so now I can't wait. Thank you to all my guests, and as always, I will put all their details on Shat Bagley's Instagram and Facebook pages. A few more countries are now tuning in, so we're up to 56 worldwide now, which is incredible. And if you feel the urge to leave a rating or maybe a review, please don't fight it. And I hope you're following or subscribing too. It's totally free. It just helps when I invite guests to join us. So I think that's it for another week. Thank you for listening, and see you next time. Right then. Wonder how many shortbread biscuits it would take to create Harvey. Oh, that's one less.